Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Newdecker. Today I am joined by another coach. He lives here in Barcelona as well, actually, and he has very much the same ethos that I do about helping people build good habits, sustainable habits, and he specializes in fat loss and muscle gain as well. So I'm joined by Paul Dermody.
Dermody, yes.
Dermody. I was going to say Dermody, but I don't have an Irish accent, so it came out not quite as nice as me. So thank you very much for joining on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really, really good to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, give the listeners a little bit of a background on how you coach people and your experience coaching people in the past as well.
Yeah, cool. So I got into coaching in and around 3 years ago. Quite quickly, I went through a physical transformation myself, and because I would be of the extreme personality type, I got into bodybuilding, men's physique competition quite quickly. I did one of those crazy extreme diets. For anyone who's listening to this that doesn't know what that is, it's basically where you stand on stage in nothing but shorts and you pose and you're judged on your muscle. Did one of those shows and dieted on such low calories that after I did the competition, I rebounded and gained a lot of weight. Felt very, very out of control, didn't feel good about it, felt very unmotivated, very tired, very uncomfortable in my own skin, didn't really like myself a whole lot, but I knew the principles and the fundamentals of fat loss, I understood them, so I literally kind of got a business idea. It's become kind of cool in the last couple of years to talk about principles versus methods. And I nearly feel I'm jumping on a bandwagon talking about principles versus methods, but that was genuinely the reason I got into personal training. I knew that I could definitely eventually diet my way back into shape through healthy habits, but I felt people who did Slimming World, Weight Watchers, fucking, pardon my French, Juice Plus.
You can swear, it's fine.
Cool. So all that stuff. I knew that they knew that the method was eating less, but they didn't know that the principle was just a very small calorie deficit with good sustainable habits, good sustainable foods. And most people who did those diets ended up doing exactly what I did on probably a worse scale, just binging and rebounding in weight gain. And binge eating is quite a taboo topic. I won't shy away from it. I feel a lot of people suffer from it. I've been there myself. Had a history of eating disorders, which I've touched on some of my own content in the past through my teens and early 20s. Never shared it with anybody until I got into personal training. So I do think that relativity or relatability even helps. But my whole idea, my whole ethos was, fuck, if this is how people diet all the time, all their adult life, I had to do it once before I realized, fuck, this sucks.
Yeah.
I hate being 2 stone overweight, considering I was 2 stone lighter 2 weeks ago. I hate this shit. So my whole ethos was educate people on the fundamentals. Like, if you take Weight Watchers and Slimming World, for example, they are methods, but they're not very empowering methods because they keep you, so to speak, at arm's length away from the principle, which is safe, sustainable calorie deficit with good foods. But the principle is always the same. It's eating less and technically moving more, which is such a ridiculously simplified version of what it actually is. Now, I just wanted to educate people on how to track their own calories in order to maintain a certain body weight and stop looking for perfection, because all mine came from, I have to be 5% body fat. I have to have an 8-pack. I have to have the biggest arms. And it took me such a little, ridiculously short amount of time and one massive experience to know that there's no perfect body, and that most people, ironically, who chase the perfect body somehow seem to get further away from it than when they started. So that was my whole business ethos, was like, fuck competing. I'm going into personal training. Yeah. I'm going to try and educate people to stop crash dieting.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that a lot of coaches, it kind of is that breaking point of, oh, wait, I thought coaching was about getting a six-pack and then helping other people get six-packs. And it's actually, when you realize it's really actually about helping people and educating people and making them be happy, then really you realize that there's less emphasis on having said six-pack. So, I mean, what was the mindset shift for you of I'll be happy when? What kind of stuff, what little things started changing for you when you realized that actually happiness doesn't come from quite just from exterior things like your aesthetics?
Yeah, so naturally I've always been fortunate that I always knew, even as a child, that money would never make you happy, popularity would never make you happy, all of this stuff. I never thought any of that stuff would compensate, but I was a highly insecure teenager. somewhat of an insecure adult, but I worked on that and I had good friends, so it wasn't too bad. But always the vital ingredient I was missing was those apps. I'll be happy when I'm ripped to shreds. I'll be happy when I'm lean. I'll be happy when I have a six pack. And it took 9 months of undergoing a physical transformation to really realize, okay, I'm going to probably sacrifice 90% of my life to get abs or to get ripped in the first place, which is fine. Like, if that's something you wish to do and you would love to have a six pack abs, you're going to need to grind to get them in the first place. So that was fine. The thing is, when I got to men's physique level of competition, which it is a really extreme place to go, I did realize that it has literally no correlation with what you think of yourself if you're not good inside. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't feel you're enough without a certain thing, no amount of that thing is going to compensate for your insecurities.
Yeah.
No client has ever asked me what I look like with my top off. No client has ever asked me what I can bench. No client has ever asked me if I've competed. No client has ever asked me, you know, they've never noticed when I put on 3% body fat. No one has ever noticed that shit. My mates, my girlfriend, nobody gives a shit how I look.
No.
But I was like this arbitrary, I need to get from 8% to 5% body fat. And it made no sense. So when I got there and I did the men's physique thing, if you've ever chased something and you thought it would bring you infinite happiness and then you got there and you realize, oh.
Yeah. Like, It's not that great.
It's not that great.
No.
So it's the one thing I always try and convince clients. I'm like, look, please, please have a little bit of realism with your target. I understand you want to look like a size 8, but you spent 32 years of your adult life as a size 24. Like, please be a bit realistic. Yeah. Aim for a size 22, then 20, then 16, and start loving yourself and the journey and start practicing a bit more happiness and security the whole way through. I can't tell anybody how to be more secure, but I can encourage people to focus on the good things rather than constantly dwelling on the things that they don't have or that I'll be happy when.
Yeah.
Just for me, and Orla, kind of my girlfriend, who did work with me for a bit, she kind of pulls me on it a little bit and says, babe, it's easy for you to say you got there and saw it wasn't all it's cracked up to be. So most people don't get there, quote unquote, get there. So they don't get the chance to see that it's not all it's cracked up to be. And to some degree, it's true.
Yeah.
But I don't care because I want to spread the message and just be like, look,
need to enforce that. Yeah, absolutely.
Focus on health. Yeah. Set some goals that are attainable. Just further enough that you're not there now, but not so far out of reach you can't get there. And just realize that it's a thing that, like, you need to be considering how to be healthy for the rest of your life, not how to have a six pack just in 6 weeks. Would be my thoughts on it.
100%. I think it's what you said of, okay, you're concentrating on what your body, how you want it to be and what it can't do, and it's not looking this way. And people get so wound up in this, but actually when you switch it and reverse it and you say, can you see? Can you hear things? Can you walk? Do you have the ability to exercise? You are in a very fortunate position. Therefore, you should be quite grateful for these things to an extent.
100%.
And obviously there are some people who are quite overweight and maybe they find exercise extremely difficult. So in those cases, it's taking it back a step and saying, well, what can we do? And I think you're very good at that, at helping people say, okay, we'll have a step goal maybe or something like that. Is that something that, obviously there's a lot of polarization of people saying, don't worry about aesthetics, it's not about dropping a dress size, it's more about performance. Would you say that you kind of, with people, would you say you get in the middle and you say, let's aim for the middle? Obviously, we need to make it tangible, so you are dropping a dress size, but also let's think about the other side as well.
100%. And I was actually going to say it to you.
Yeah.
If someone came to me wanting a six-pack or to be a size 10, that's something you have to take seriously. Like, yeah. I mean, they're not paying me to convince them they don't want to be a size 10. My thing is, don't get attached.
Yes.
My thing is, don't think it's going to solve the gap between your insecurity necessarily. Maybe it'll make you aware. Like, don't get me wrong. Having abs or having size 10 will probably make you more confident if you're in a place to accept it. My thing is, don't get attached. Life won't always offer you the position to be tracking your calories, to be eating perfectly, to be training like a superhero. Life won't always offer you that. So rather than coming in and saying, right, we're going to 100, we're not. We're going to think about 100. We might act 83. But 67 is better than zero.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm encouraging people to set a target, set a calorie target, set a step target, have it conducive to losing one. How do you lose 100 pounds? Pound by pound. You get into a 3,500 calorie deficit over a 7 to 10 day period. Pound by pound. That's how it works. If you lose more, great. If you don't, boo fucking who. But that's kind of how it works. Pound by pound. Do not get attached.
Yeah.
Attachment is the root of all that is disappointing in life. you get attached to the scale, and the week it doesn't go down, you start projecting that insecurity and that unhappiness onto everybody else you love. And I'm actually really big on that kind of thing. If you get attached to looking a certain way and your genetics literally don't allow you to get an APAC, then you're just going to spend the rest of your life insecure and miserable. But at the same time, why not aim for it? Why not think to some degree? Like, it's conflicting. It's kind of pulling from both ends where don't worry solely about being a size 10, coupled with think in the mindset of, what would a size 10 do? Yeah, they probably wouldn't eat a large Domino's pizza by themselves on Saturday night.
Exactly. It's adopting those habits that go with visualizing what that person looks like.
Yeah.
Are your actions conducive to getting to that way or getting to that lifestyle? So if you are eating that much pizza on a Saturday night, it's not going to get you there.
Yeah.
But like, it's accepting that. If you don't want it, if you want to give that up, great.
Yeah, I mean, I do actually think there are periods of in life where discipline will benefit. Like, I mean, it's easy and it's almost trendy now for some PTs, like, eat and drink as much booze and pizza as you want.
Yeah.
Who cares? And I don't agree with that message. I actually do think my whole thing isn't one or the other. I've never, believe it or not, actually told a client what to do. This sounds bananas. I've never told a client what to do. I'll get a message from a client and they'll say something like, my mate told me to go for pizza tonight. And I'll be like, okay, are you going to go? And they're like, what will I do? I'm like, do you want to go for pizza?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I kind of do. And I'm like, what's the dilemma? And obviously, I'm afraid of getting fat. And I'm like, look, here's a decision you're going to make. You're going to go and you're going to enjoy it. And you're going to be present and you're going to accept that the consequences, you might feel a bit sluggish after and you might wake up a bit lethargic tomorrow. And you're going to accept that consequence. Or you're going to go and you're not going to go or whatever, and you're going to remain disciplined and you're not going to eat the pizza, but you're still going to have fun and you're going to embrace the discipline. But you're not going to do an action and have the opposite emotion. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't like that conflict. So conflict. For me, most of the time I would remain disciplined. I may have a slice or two because even just logically, calorically, it's not as bad. But for me, it's choose that appropriate action and then accept that appropriate consequence, and then you become the average of all those decisions. That's the kind of ethos I like to spread. I want people thinking for themselves. I want somebody who works with me in 3 months' time to know exactly what they stand for, what they want, how to discipline themselves.
Yeah.
I want everybody in the world to realize that. I don't think there's a person on the planet, from the winner of Mr. Olympia to me and you sitting here, who wouldn't stand naked in front of a mirror and pick every ugly, raw, vulnerable part of them apart, thinking you're horrible, you've skinny legs and a fat belly and an ugly face.
I think especially them.
Yeah. But I don't think there's a person alive that wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And if you're particularly vulnerable right now, perhaps your actions should map to someone more disciplined. Maybe a couple of less pizzas and a couple of less pints would actually benefit you.
Yeah.
Like, but if you decide not to,
cool.
But don't complain about being a little bit, tiny bit chubbier in 6 weeks.
Exactly. And I think it's accepting that is how you are and how you are going to be having to deal with the outcomes of that as well. And I think as well, going back to, obviously, me and you have chatted about it before, but the polarization of things on social media just eat the pizza, treat yourself, eat the pizza, but not necessarily for some people. And I might seem like I'm a bit of I'm not being so fun, but I would say probably maybe don't eat the pizza. But that's why we don't polarize our views so much, and we're coaches that probably sit on the fence a bit more, and we have strong opinions about what is right for people, but in terms of going crazy in either direction, I just don't think that's going to be very helpful for people, because they're all individuals and they're different, and that's a big part of coaching. How do you think that, obviously, on social media it's very much like seems like you have to have some kind of really polarized view on something. It's good, it's really good, or it's really, really bad, to get any kind of like leverage in a way. What are your views on the impact that has of the consumer, maybe someone who is trying to lose weight? How do you think that would be impacting for them?
It's a great question. It's a really good question. Like, we talked just before we went on this about that kind of social media stuff.
Yeah.
For me, I don't have much of an interest in polarizing people. I can see why you would do it. It's the way to lead to mass fame and mass followers. And
a lot of people have done it. Yeah.
And power to you. If you can get it, if you can piss off half the people and have the other people love you, power to you.
Yeah.
It's great. It's not my style. I've never been the type to want controversy.
Mm.
I am a big believer in just putting out the message that you truly and wholeheartedly believe in.
Yeah.
I don't actually think, if you're talking from the eyes of a PT, I don't think you have to polarize to run a successful business. I don't think you have to I don't think there's any rules, contrary to what is sold and rammed down our face. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any magic sales technique.
No.
Like,
yeah.
If you were to, this is, my mind works this way. My mind works this way. If I converted 1% of my audience in, or 1% of my following into paying customers, I can't physically work that much.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. I cannot keep 50, or if you go on Facebook, I can't keep 150 clients happy. Like, I can't physically do, I don't have that capability.
Yeah.
That would mean that I need staff. And I've jumped in there and I've taken on staff in the past. I took on my girlfriend and she came in and worked with me as my partner, and I took on two other people. And that didn't work for me. I didn't like that system. I like being in control myself. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not about polarizing. My whole thing is, if you go to my Instagram, I just literally use the simplest of metaphors and analogies to make people realize why they're fat. I like to think so. Like,
the best analogies.
Like, the analogy that I've definitely gotten the most reception, like, come back to, and definitely I actually think it probably signed up the most clients, or certainly had the most inquiries to, was I said to someone, if you had a budget and you ended up going over that budget by a fiver, would you go then to the credit union or the bank and take out your 10 grand savings and spend it and fuck that off just because you spent a fiver and think you'll be richer next Monday? Mm-hmm. But people do that with their calories all the time. They go 200 over with a Moro, eat 42 double decker bars, and mm-hmm. think somehow not only will they start Monday, a delayed version of now, but that they'll somehow be slimmer next week after slamming 10,000 calories of shit.
Yeah, and then they're disappointed when they're not.
And exactly. It's like, oh, well, I can't eat chocolate because I... Like, you can. You just shouldn't eat 32 chocolate bars.
Yeah.
Try one. Try six if you eat 30. Like, try a watered-down amount of the amount you currently eat.
Yeah.
It's where I actually think obese people go wrong. It was one of my pet peeves when I worked in the gym. I used to see obese and overweight people taking on meal plans that I, as a physique competitor, could barely stand for my fucking 6 weeks.
Oh my God, yeah.
I'm like, how? You eat 36 takeaways a week. Eat 12. Eat 12 this week and you'll lose weight, I promise. And then in 3 weeks you'll see you've lost weight and you won't want takeaway, you might want two and you're golden, and then you'll start replacing the chips for potatoes, and in 6 weeks you'll be down 10 pounds, you'll be loving life.
Yeah.
And I really mean that. And like, why can I, a man sitting here at 12% body fat, go down to my favorite place and have a chocolate acai bowl two or three times a week, and yet someone with 25% more body fat than me doesn't do it? It's the bad knowledge that has been rammed down our throat.
Yep.
And I do think overweight people have to take responsibility for constantly going to fucking Simming World and constantly going to Weight Watchers, where they don't give you the principle. Like, if I took your wallet for a week or your credit card, you can't spend a penny. So then technically, with me, you've saved 100% of your cash. Can I run around advertising myself as a world-class financial advisor? Probably not. I just stole your credit card. Once I give it back to you, you still have the same financial blueprint. And that's what I feel Weight Watchers, Slimming World, and any cult diet does to people. So any coach that's kind of like, here, look, eat 2,000 calories. What'll I eat? What the fuck you want? All of a sudden, you've programmed that person to think for themselves. And where they're worried then, they're like, oh my God, I'm going to eat 2,000 calories of cookies. What will I do? They actually get way more conscious. Like, did you know mango has 80 calories a serving? And it's so yummy. I'm like, I did know that.
Yeah.
Now you do too.
Yeah.
Now you know that you can stay in a deficit eating bloody mangoes and a chocolate bar, all the stuff you were bloody afraid of last week, and now you're losing body fat. And I think, boom.
It's taking that ownership.
Yeah, taking 100% ownership. So going back to your original question, I don't like to polarize. If I get six people a day messaging me with it, that's a brilliant analogy. You've changed my relationship with food. I'm like, sorted. Cool. Great. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as well, what you mentioned about Weight Watchers and Slimming World, and obviously it gets a pretty bad bad rap on social media about people trying to take down Slimming World. I think this thing on about Sins and people going crazy about some Müller light yogurt at the moment.
Saw that.
Yeah, people are literally losing their shit about it. And I mean, what would you say if about it actually maybe somehow being beneficial for people, that if they are that averse to counting calories, that this is a module that is going to help them not count calories but lose weight? Would you say, in a way, it could be helpful, or would you say that long term it's actually still not helpful?
Slimming World,
yeah.
No, I won't lie, I don't think it's massively helpful. The analogy I would give, it's just, and look, it's, if I give you a sheet, we live in Barcelona, if I give you a sheet with every Spanish phrase written on it, you can probably go out and converse with everybody and interact with anybody you meet.
Yeah.
But the second I take that sheet away from you, you can't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
It's a little bit how I see those diets.
Okay, yeah, I understand. Yeah,
as if I give you the sheet and say, here, look, learn these principles. The principle is learn how to speak to someone. learn how to speak so that when... Look, my whole ethos with food is do whatever the fuck you want. But if you're out on Saturday night and it costs you a shit ton of anxiety and you either don't know how to remain in your deficit while eating out, or you haven't acquired the mental fortitude to accept the consequence that life isn't always a calorie deficit. Maybe I will have a pie tonight and do both in appropriate amounts. Then I'm not a fan. There's very few times I would be an advocate of Slimming World or Weight Watchers. Mm-hmm. I don't think they give the principle. I really don't think they give the principle. The principle is so much more empowering than any form of method.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for people to just realize that. I mean, look, I'm not going to change the world's view on that. I'm going to speak on my podcast or speak on your podcast about it. And I truly, truly believe it. But I'm not going to change the world. Not for me, I see little to no application on it. Yeah. But that's just my opinion.
I think it's that thing of people like you and I, we'd love to change the world in these modules and make sure that people have the long-term help. But unfortunately, we don't quite have the reach yet to do that. No. So at the moment, let's just try and help individual people as much as we can. But obviously, taking to social and slamming all these things is probably going to be much benefit. You might as well put the guidelines out there of how people can actually do it and can learn, like you said, and learn about energy balance, for example, and what foods are healthy and what foods are going to be better for you in higher volume. And I mean, you always talk about, I talk about a lot of that feeling of feeling healthier and how actually that is a goal in itself. However, that's just not tangible for people enough to say, you're going to feel so good, you're going to feel so healthy. Do you think, when, say, if you had a client come to you and they said, I want to be a size 10. And you say, yeah, but you're going to, what about getting healthy? What about the benefits of reduced disease and illness? Do you, in a way, what's your moral standpoint in going, okay, we can help you get to that dress size. Do you think feeling healthy is a tangible enough goal for people in the first part?
It's a really good thing to have in the back of your mind as a coach, or should I say at the front of your mind. It won't be the thing that makes someone want to work with you. What I do always, and whether I'm wrong or right, whenever someone tells me their goal, I accept it and I very much entertain it. And I really do accept it, but my whole thing is, what is the next step we could do to make you healthy enough to aim for the size 10? So a lot of people who are in decent shape who have been training for a couple of years but just aren't where they want to actually have really bad habits, like bad sleep. Sleep is a big one for me, or whatever it is. And if it's someone overweight and someone with a lot of weight to lose, they're just consuming way too high a volume of junk foods. I don't think on the forefront health is enough to say let's get you healthy. I think you need to give people what they want on the front end, but really what they need on the back end. I really do. So for me, if I were to get someone who's kind of constantly in decent nick, but just touching where they want to be, but not quite, I would look at things like how their sleep is, how their quality of life is, how their stress management is, their intake of fruits and vegetables. Like the generic stuff that I nearly feel awfully foolish as a PT being paid to do, but you'd be somewhat surprised how many people that are, you know, we all know the people who's effortlessly slim, who do, we're like, fuck you, you don't do anything to look like that. But if they want to kick it up a notch, their water's bad, their sleep shit, their stress management's awful, their fruit and veg intake is non-existent. And if they did those things, they'd see massive return. And then, depending on the starting point, I had a client, and I'm still working with him, he started with me at 31 stone, and he's down now just above 21, and like literally, the start for him getting healthier was, you know, one takeaway a day instead of two. And that sounds outrageous, that like someone obese might come and be like, that's been the reaction, like, you can't be serious. I'm like, I'm telling you, it'll be fine. They see they drop the first couple of pounds and then they start thinking, geez, what could I do to get healthy next? People need to see that little bit of a result, and they need to see that return on investment buy into the health thing.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you what it's like to be healthy. I've chased hardcore aesthetics, and then I've scaled back a little bit, gotten to a much healthier body fat. And now I'm like, well, I want to be able to bend over and touch my toes when I'm 93. But I don't want to look shit. So, yeah, I think you need to know what's best for every individual. in spite of what they think, give them what they think they want on the front end, but truly, truly what they need on the back end.
Yeah.
Like, you won't be a good fit. I won't be a good fit for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want it now. You know,
Yeah. And they want to be given that straight away.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of the time where it comes back into these kind of cookie cutter meal plans that are like that Mr. Olympia wouldn't be able to adhere to, let alone someone who has takeaways every week.
Like, how many adults, I'd say we both know a couple, will spend the next 40 years in and out of dieting rather than spend 4 to 8 weeks they need on My Fitness Pal? Like, one thing I like to do with my clients in the end of the first or second week, no matter what, I'm like, I want you to make me up a meal right now. Like, not literally. I want you to text me over a meal right now that's 30 grams carb, 10 gram fat, and 30 gram protein. And you can be 5 grams either side wrong. And they have to text it to me straight away. And if they can't, no problem. It's totally cool. But they need to know it again for the next day. And you'd be blown away how many people can't do that. And my whole philosophy is, if you can't, even mentally right now, if I can't tell you that if I want a 30 gram carb meal, I'm going to have around 50 grams of oats.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't tell me that, it's a little bit like driving with a blindfold. Like, you may get there safely, but I mean, it'd be a lot better to know the route you're taking, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's that thing of like making people run before they can walk. And sometimes giving someone a macro plan and saying, okay, go. And it's like, and then they don't hit their macros consistently every day. And you're not giving them the tools that they need to actually get those plans. And like you say, they're driving with a blindfold.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be more to it. And it's actually taking it step by step.
I'm a big fan of a calorie target for the first week or two.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of, if you were to save money right now, let's say 20 quid. If you were to save money, I'd be like, bring me 20 quid by the end of the week. Oh, do you want a 20 quid note? I'm like, I don't give a shit if it's in 50 cent coins or if it's in 10 euro notes or 20. Just by the end of the week, have 20 euros on that table for me.
Yeah.
So you can consider the 20 euros as just the calories. But then if I make a protein target, so I might say 20 quid, but I want a fiver protein. I want a fiver of that as a note.
Yeah.
And do whatever the hell you want with the other 15 quid. But
yeah.
And five euros of that 20 must be a note. I want the other 15 euros in any kind of form. So the fiver represents the protein. So then someone comes to me and is like, yeah, hit the target of the protein, 5 euros. And the other 15 is carbs or fats, and people can do whatever
they want. They want them because the ratio doesn't matter.
And it almost sounds overbearing at first or overwhelming, but I have found tremendous success rate with it. I have found literally that, because I like clients to commit to me for 3 months, and I found now after 2 months, clients are able to bow out. And like, I consider that a huge success because they'll talk nice things about me and they'll say, oh yeah. Like, I love the idea of having my client Sally down at her local pub, that when everybody's like, you know, sucking Rivita Monday to Thursday in fresh air and then eating large pizza and wine, wondering when the diet starts, I love that person being empowered enough to be like, the person who either offers their mates advice or is just like, yeah, I don't need to think like this anymore. My relationship with food is so much better because I actually learned how to track my bloody calories.
Absolutely. And I think it's a lot of the time people think that they need this tremendous amount of willpower to adhere to these things. And unfortunately, me and you know that willpower is never going to be enough and it's never going to get you through it. And also, you shouldn't actually need to have a ton of willpower to adhere to these things. It shouldn't be that grueling. But unfortunately, the diet industry doesn't really make much money off the fact that, of things being easy, because it doesn't sound as sexy, to be honest.
Let me ask you something there.
Yeah.
Do you feel now that almost when people start making tangible progress off tracking their calories, do you nearly feel that because they're only tracking calories and they realize, geez, the bag of Skips is only 80 calories, that they nearly think, oh, this is too easy. This couldn't work.
People like to have something more complicated.
And then they associate weight loss with, like, this is torture.
Yeah.
If weight loss isn't torture,
then
it's not working.
It's not working. And I think it's partly the diet industry has something to blame, but also there's a psychology aspect of it that people like to make. I swear there was a study where people chose the more difficult option of how to get to a goal. And I think it's the way we're hardwired sometimes. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, this is something that I've read at some stage.
I think you're right. I think they do it in a self-sabotage way. If you put someone at the bottom of a staircase and tell them to take a lift or the stairs, they're not going to take the stairs. They're not always.
Say as well, when I opened the door, Paul was coming up the stairs. So he does live true to his word. Always using the stairs instead of the escalator.
I think fat loss is not that crazy-ass workout or diet plan that you're not doing. I don't think it's that. I think fat loss is, you know, getting off a stop earlier at work,
yeah.
You know, like having a biscuit, mm-hmm. but not six.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes having a bit of discipline. Sometimes just going, do you know what? I won't press the fuck it button just because it's Saturday, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. But I just like you using that sentence and putting it on some shiny advert. It's not going to make people say, click to buy.
Yeah.
Just have one less biscuit.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine it on an advert. I'm sorry. Like, it's true. It's right. It's the right thing, 100%.
I think
but
so.
But it doesn't sell.
Nope.
And that's where coaches like us, we bang our head against the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine a lot of trainers, certainly with the right ethos. Like, you know, the fitness industry gets such a bashing, but there's a lot of really good...
I do say the negatives of it a bit too much and I'll have my hands off. But, yeah.
I used to be like that. And then I realised, well, I used to be afraid to date girls because I thought, like, girls are just like guys. I'm like, no, you're just putting your attention on the wrong people. Like, I mean, I think what you put your attention on, it becomes your reality. I mean,
absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that, like, I do it by knee-jerk reaction sometimes. And, like, even in the way that I post content, and I sometimes will put something, I'll be like, oh, it's so negative. And I'll be like, oh, but I don't need to even let it be a thing, you know? It's you see what, and you make more of what you perceive it and how you want to perceive it.
Yeah, your view of the world does become your reality, and there'll be a million, I mean, no more than if you view the fitness industry a bit negatively, which I totally get why you would, but I also would encourage not.
Mm.
If you view your reality, if you view your diet, if you view your body, if you view anything with a negative light, that's, if you think, this is just the truth, if you think you're a fat bitch who doesn't deserve to look in any way good, I'm afraid that is the way you're going to see yourself and you're going to be self-conscious.
Absolutely.
And they're not my words. They're words that have been given to me by friends and people I know. And I'm like, that is not true. That is not a true statement. That's an attachment you've given yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's, I think it's a quote, and I think Jordan Syatt, he uses this one a lot, and he says, if you've got thoughts like that about yourself, would you say that to one of your good friends about them? And people always go, No, you wouldn't.
You would not be long with anybody who wanted to be around you with that kind of self-talk. Like, me and Kate can sit here all day and talk about the fundamentals, fat loss, track of calories, and I'm not actually convinced people don't know that. I'm convinced that when people have a really bad day at work, you know, there's a correlation. Now, this is so anecdotal, there's a correlation to me that a lot of overweight people I work with have jobs they fucking hate. They're talked down to all day by staff, they're talked down to all day by their boss, and then they're dealing with dickheads at work. And it's no wonder they want to come home and just forget the world, and they've used all that willpower all day not slamming the teeth down the throat of the biggest dickhead they know. And I mean, it's super, super, super common. And like Gary Vee jokes about being a firefighter. I nearly feel more of a firefighter, where you're dealing with someone and you're trying to help them, and you're like, look, please don't go home and self-abuse through food and self-medicate through food to compensate for the fact that there's a dickhead at work. If anything, go the opposite way and show them and lose weight and get more confidence to leave your job. Like, when I was trying to chase my abs and my six pack, and I was not a very secure adult. I worked in a betting office until I was 24, which is 4 years ago. If you told me 4 years ago my life would go in the direction it did, like, I would have said, not in a billion trillion years could I ever work for myself, could I ever live abroad, could I ever just, you know, run my own little business. I would have never said that was possible. But undergoing a physical transformation gave me such crazy amount of confidence in myself, not the six pack and not the abs, but the ability to set a target and hit it in the good days and the bad days. That like, when days were good, I embraced them, but when days were bad, I equally set my mindset to be like, well, of course there's going to be bad days, of course there are stressful days. I mean, that's what life is. And if you're waiting for a life devoid of stressful days, you might as well jump off the face of the earth now, if that's what your success depends on.
Yeah.
So I'm begging people who are 15, 16, 17, 18 stone to realize that is a mismanagement of calories. You can dress it up how you want. It's stress, it's bad knowledge, it's emotional eating, it's whatever it is. It is a mismanagement of calories. And if you're doing that to yourself simply because you're numbing out to somebody else being a fuckface, then I urge you to stop and consider and have a plan, and maybe have a coach or a friend, someone who doesn't justify your bad behaviors, and set the target and focus on losing a pound a week until you reach your target. Because the world is a very cruel, cruel, cruel place, and the world possesses a lot of things we don't want to have. I talked to Kate before we went on about, like, there's just only one reaction we can ever control when someone's a fuckface to us, and that's our own. And ironically, we focus on everybody else, the world, changing their actions to suit us. Like, Why should the world change if you're not willing to? Like, this is a real conversation, and I'm harping on that, but like, why should your dickhead boss change his actions if you're not willing to come home and change yours? Like, why? And like, well, I never thought about it like that. I'm like, yeah, I know, that's because your boss is a fuckface, but from my point of view, your actions are not supporting. Like, I'm looking directly in at two bad actions. You can't just justify yours based on what someone else did. So, going back to my original point, I'm not convinced it's all knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm convinced it's a lot of rewiring of the mindset. Like, man's mind stretched by new dimensions cannot return back to their old dimensions. And when you start to hammer and go all in on what you're trying to achieve, it's really hard to go back to your old ways.
100%. I agree with you. I mean, obviously, you're very good at instilling that empowerment in people and realizing that, making them realize that they are in control of this. What would you say the effects of, because, I mean, fat shaming still does happen.
Yeah.
We live in a pretty fat-phobic world. How do you think that affects people in that victim mentality?
How do I even start going on to this?
Big question. Like,
no, it's a great question. It's a terrific question. I do love these conversations. I think I'm the biggest proponent of nothing matters unless you allow it to. Mm-hmm. Nothing. If I walked into a room right now, and not that I ever would, and said to someone, you're ugly, you're fat, you're stupid, and you've no hope, I would like to think those words would have no effect, but they wouldn't. And I think the only, I actually, believe it or not, when I talked about this in a blog post, it's the only post I've had that went viral that had like nearly 1,000 shares. When I was 15 years old, I was in school, and a guy came over, and I was sitting on the seat he wanted. This is absolutely true, I'll never forget it. Took my school bag, just picked it up, threw it across the room, and said, fetch, fat fuck. That landed with me so hard that it took until I was 20, 24, 25 and underwent that physical six-pack transformation and then got the abs and realized it wasn't happiness. I literally did the deduction and realized that the only reason that comment landed with me is because I was vulnerable about my looks. Like, he didn't say, like, your shoes are awful. Like, and if he did, it wouldn't have landed because I didn't care what he thought of my shoes. Mm-hmm. I didn't care what he thought of my hair. I didn't care what he thought of my clothing. But I cared what people perceived my weight because I'm insecure about it.
Yep.
So, do we live in a fat phobic society? I think if you asked overweight people, they'd say yes.
Yeah.
But I'd also argue that that's potentially a cop. We live in a, like, there's sex trafficking in the world.
Yeah.
There's someone getting raped right now as a 6-year-old. Such an uncomfortable topic. But there's child trafficking, there's sex trafficking, there's oppression, there's fat. Like, I would be counting, I'm literally, after reading a book called Man's Search for Meaning that I was telling Kate off air, that your man talked about being a concentration camp survivor, where literally whether or not he got a couple of peas at the end of the day was the difference between life and death. And then you have dickheads complaining, well, he called me fat. Like, tough, who cares what he thinks? Like, what do you think of yourself?
Yeah.
Well, I do think I'm fat. So you're not worried about his opinion then, you're worried about your own. Like, I honestly feel there's not a person that could come in and say anything to me that would land, because I haven't not felt it about myself and made peace with that. I've thought I was fat, and I thought I've been unattractive, and I thought I've been not worthy, and I thought I'd fail a business, and I've had all those emotions. And if you asked me at a given time, you're shit at business, or you're bad looking, or you're fat, I would have got hurt in myself because I was insecure.
Mm-hmm.
So look, yeah, I mean, you can argue that fat phobia exists. I don't see much of it. Maybe it's just because it's my reality.
Mm-hmm.
You can argue that, like, people body shame and fat shame. I believe bullying exists.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a fat thing. I think it's a dickhead thing.
Just bullying.
Like,
yeah.
For me, and this is why I hate identity politics. It's why I hate ideologies. It's why I'm not a fan of, like, group segregation. Like, the way you see the world becomes your reality. The only reason we think in such a way is because we're particularly insecure about it in that respect ourselves. There's so many things going on in the world. Like, my whole philosophy is, when somebody tries to create a movement, like, and a movement, keep in mind, is something that people have to voluntarily want to be part of. You can't ram it down their throat. It's like, well, fuck la-dee-da, your life is so bloody perfect and you've mastered morals and virtues to the degree that you can tell me what to do and how to live my life, and you can do it confidently without ever thinking that maybe you should change your actions. Like, that's how I see the world, when people are like, well, this is how it should be. Like, fat people should be treated with dignity and respect. Men and women are equal. Da-da-da. Like, yeah, cool, but like, why don't you treat people like that and lead by example? Stop telling me how to fucking live. If you're fat and you're worried about fat phobia or fat shaming, I would ask you to just ask yourself, are you self-conscious? Do you think you're fat? Are you letting that become your reality? Because why have I not felt fat phobic or fat shamed since I was 15 and I'm 28 now? It's because I made peace with it. It's because I don't give a shit. And like, it can sound a bit cold and a bit harsh. And my sister's a counselor and she would have slightly differing beliefs on how I handle shit. I'm like, no, get real. Like, do you think you're a little bit fatter than you'd like to be? And I don't think fat is being body fat. I think fat's being self-conscious about how you look. So before you go try to change the world on how it should be, sort your shit out would be my thing. Like, yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, that handsome dickhead with a six pack is fat shaming someone over there. But like, I mean, like if he was chess player shaming, you probably wouldn't notice because you don't like chess, you know? So
yeah,
that's my
doesn't
logic.
Doesn't really exist, does it?
That's just my, but again, that's my reality. Yeah, I mean, someone true. Could come along and say, no, you're wrong. There's harsh bullying in the world and there's strong oppression and you're wrong. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get that and I respect that, but it's just not my reality. And even if it is, I can't change it by bitching about it. All I can do is A, get slim, and B, encourage people I work with to get slim. Like you said, empowered to believe in themselves, to think, you know what? The noise of the world, who cares?
Absolutely.
It's fucking there.
And I think that's very true in saying that the way Paul has said it there, it could sound to some people like it's quite tough, quite cold, quite harsh, but it's tough love because there's always going to be dickheads. They're always going to be around and there's always going to be bullies. But if we can make the positivity louder, if we can empower people more to ignore
Keep in mind, I'm a product of national school bullying and eating disorder and someone who spent an entire amount of his life highly insecure. I'm not speaking from some... Yeah. You might go into my Instagram now and think, oh, he's lean and fit. You know, like, who the fuck is he? I'm saying this as someone who's come out of the opposite end. If you disagree with me, I totally respect that. But I would ask again, why is my opinion so valid in your life? Like, why do you give a shit about my opinion?
Yeah, but to be fair, if people didn't give a shit about our opinions, they wouldn't listen to
it. True. No, it's true. And like, I think no more than yourself, like people listen to you. People listen to people in which they feel like, to some degree, if you listen to someone, you're thinking, you have something that you possess that I would like to have.
Yeah.
And I believe having a strong mindset, one impenetrable, one where, like, I'm not saying the world's fucking fairy tales and rainbows. Like, I told you before this, I'm trying to construct a life. This is probably a bit heavy, but I'll put it out there anyway. I'm trying to construct a life where that, when either of my parents die at my mother's funeral, that I've such a strong set of characteristics and virtues that I'm the strong one who's able to bear it all and that people look to me for strength so that then when Johnny Dickhead on Instagram calls me a fuckface or fat, I'm like, that's all you got? Man, my mother died. Like, if you think that's going to bother me, you can go fuck yourself. And that sounds so grim. But like I think there's a term for it. I don't really know. It's just how I've always thought. I just relate everything to the worst possible. Like, someone thinking I'm fat versus my girlfriend or my mother dying, they don't even compare. And one day something in the world is going to happen and it's going to slap me across the face and give me a harsh taste of reality. And the fact it hasn't happened yet makes me very grateful. But I actually think a lot of people are going to live life, you know, worrying about how it is and how it should be. And then life will offer them something crap. And they'll realize, oh, whoops, spent a lot of my life worrying about shit that I shouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that whole going back again to that, I need the six pack, I need this, I need all this stuff to make my life better. But then you really don't give a shit about a six pack when you don't have health or when a family member doesn't have health. Like, nothing else matters at all.
Agreed.
And I think you're very strongly for creating a life that you enjoy. And I think it's very easy for us to be like, oh, well, we live here in Barcelona and it's all very nice and it's sunny and, you know, it's healthy food. And obviously we've got the education about food as well to know, to make good choices. Why do you think, going back to overeating issues, why do you think that people overeat? Would you say that it is a lack of happiness? Would you say it's more the ability to deal with stress, for example?
Oh, if they're probably the hardest question I've been asked.
It's not 100% specific, and it's a pretty broad one.
But it's a great question, and we all interpret the world very differently, don't we? I wish I knew.
Mm.
I wish I knew. I mean, I gave a big, massive rah-rah speech about fat phobia and fat shaming because I really believe that you shouldn't let that noise into your mind. And I do believe we have the power to control that.
Yeah.
When you talk overeating, I've seen people get hammered on social media for offering opinions on this.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps because they're not qualified to do so. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of PTs would hold their, like, oh, I'm not touching this one. I am willing to touch this one. But it's such a broad a broad, broad spectrum, and I don't want to sound like I'm copping out. Do I think it's knowledge? Maybe. Do I think it's the analogy of, you know, you think there's good and bad foods, so if you have a bad food, you think, fuck it, I'll just have loads of bad food and start tomorrow, maybe. But that falls into my, you spent a tenner more than you should, so try not to spend an extra 100 quid. We all deal with emotion and stress very, very different, and it's been brought to my attention lately by my sister that she thinks I'm quite mentally well developed, but I shouldn't necessarily throw beliefs out there about it, because some people who may not be as far along on the journey. Now, again, I mean, if you don't like someone's opinion on emotional eating, you shouldn't listen to it, but it could be, like, if I heard really harsh, get the fuck over it, I would respond really well to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my personality. It doesn't matter how embroiled in it I was, all the good advice I've ever gotten in the world has been very, like, punch in the jaw.
Yeah.
Like, you are not where you want to be because you're fucking up. I'm like, thank you for that. Not everybody responds like that, so.
It's really true. It's really true, and I think as well, there's a lot more coaches that handle it very delicately, and they skirt around the issue. But unfortunately, this is an issue as coaches that we do have to deal with.
Yeah, I think you need to be well versed on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if you don't put it out there because you're theoretically not qualified with a master's degree, to me, going through that whole process personally is almost as valuable. No, to me, it's more valuable than a qualification, if I'm honest, because I know I know that I only had a binge eating disorder because I thought good foods, bad foods. I thought chocolate is fat, broccoli is slim.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it works. So if you eat chocolate, binge, and it'll be better tomorrow.
Absolutely. Like, it was the same with me, 100%.
Yeah, I know that bringing my attention that, hang on, chocolate costs €10 and broccoli costs €1. So how do you want to spend your budget? But if you spend the tenner on chocolate, don't spend 50. Those kind of analogies, when I learned about calories, were what brought me around out of the kind of emotional stress eating. Like, oh, hang on, that wasn't actually emotional. That was the emotion through bad knowledge.
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to put that out there. Maybe your knowledge is slightly not where it should be, and you've mistaken it for some sort of stress eating.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's a million reasons.
110 different reasons. And I think as well, touching upon what you mentioned there and about, I was thinking about this the other day, and anecdotal advice, evidence-based advice, and it's kind of merging the two. Like you said, there's obviously a lot of weight in having experience yourself in certain issues. And I think it's how you use that experience and how you vocalize that to people. And I think you're quite self-aware in that you're like, this happened to me, but actually the way I solved it might not be the way it works for you. But I think there is probably quite a lot of people who will share anecdotal advice and enforce that particular route on people and say, this worked for me and it's going to work for you.
Yeah.
You see it with bodybuilders saying, you're going to do a ton of lateral raises even though you've got a torn rotator cuff. You see it with...
Keto is a great example. I was afraid of carbs because all I heard was, you have to be low carb.
Yeah.
Where I'm a bit, and you just touched on it. My whole thing is, well, it's a complex world. So all I can ever say is, based on my experience, based on working with people, based on my own personal experience, this is how it was for me.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's worth considering.
Yeah.
That's all.
Absolutely. And I think it's that having that open mind about it as well. And I think any information that people deduct from this, from any information you see online, just have an open mind about it and always be willing to question things. Always be willing to think, okay, well, I've also seen opposing views in this way. And then just gauging it for yourself, really, and questioning things is a skill in itself instead of just, like, taking information, consuming it, and putting it to work.
It's true, because I speak for myself when I say most of my motivation has not been, that I've gotten from others, has been through kind of seeing how they live, watch what they do, see how they act, see how they come across, rather than just the knowledge or the theoretical knowledge they possess. Like, a lot of the people I look up to are just, they're just doers. Yeah. Like, if you look at anybody who started the gym when they were 16, they made decent results without any knowledge because they just showed up. And a lot of my whole philosophy is just show up and try and stay consistent. And that's kind of my truth, so I have no problem preaching the, like, just show up, just try and be a bit better, just do your best. I sound like I'm very, like, well, these are my beliefs, but when I work one-on-one with people, I actually listen a lot more than I talk. I really do. I keep my two ears open and I try and shut my one mouth when I'm listening to someone, because I'm here speaking very broadly and very generally. because I'd like to get someone's mindset shift just enough that it could set the trajectory of their diet world to change for the rest of their life. But when I work with someone, like, you, if you're overweight, you didn't get there by accident, and I need to know why the reason is, and like, why you need to change, what's driving the change, and what's holding you back. Like, I can't be like, well, this is, like, here, we're going to do 10,000 crunches, like, because I did them. Like, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't.
It really, really doesn't.
Yeah, and I think it's knowing, it's just down to the individual, always, and it's just tailoring it down to the individual, always, and I think that is a job, it's your job, main job as a coach.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're gonna dial down who your main coaching client is, and there might be a particular type, but at the end of the day, you're going to be working with a range of different people. So it's always making sure that they're getting the results in whatever way is best for them.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, I dropped this phrase from Gary Vee, of legacy over currency. I'd much rather have someone who I feel I can impact positively than take their money. If I honestly felt that I was getting an inquiry from someone who I wouldn't be a good fit for, I would tell them I don't think I'll be a good fit for them.
Yeah.
I really would, and I have done. But I'm very passionate, and I really think it's where it's led me down. I'm passionate on taking someone, usually overweight, who's been on the diet merry-go-round, bodybuilder diet, sedentary diet, life, you know, stupidly insane, back to sedentary, where, you know, how many steps did you take today? I took 2,000, great. Tomorrow I take 5,000 and eat 200 less calories. And like, to most people, it just doesn't seem hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but this is how you do it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like, you can get sliced in 6 weeks with a cookie cutter, but why not think rest of your life?
Yeah.
Why not think track steps, track some food? You know, like, I joked on a post today that your dad is not going to pass his driving test because he's probably picked up a shit ton of bad habits. But a new 17-year-old, 5 lessons in, will, because they're consciously thinking on how to be a really good driver. I just want people to spend 5 weeks in the learner-driver mindset, like, two hands on the wheel, neck protruding forward, stupidly bobbing their head. Like, look at me, I'm on the road, I'm aware. I want people to take that mentality with food a little bit so they can be cautious with the speed limit, i.e. cautious with their calories. Very focused on the road, i.e. focus on the foods they eat. So then, in 6 years, you're like, yeah, do you remember back 6 years ago, I tracked my food for 10, 12, 16 weeks, and now I know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think if you ask any of my clients who have undergone transformations, it's not because I told, I still maintain the audacious stat that since I've gone online, I haven't told a single client what to do, with the exception of a calorie number. With the exception of a calorie number, I haven't told a single client what to do. That's kind of something I'm like trying to almost go the whole career with, you know?
Yeah.
I've never set, this is what you eat and this is what you don't, or more to the point, don't go out Saturday night. I'm like, I'll get a message. I hope you don't mind me harping on, but just because I'll get a message from a girl. One of my clients is 2 stone down. Now, she's got quite a bit of weight to lose, but she'll get there because I can see it in her mindset and her resilience already. But she'd message and she's like, I have 2 staff parties and then I have a holiday. Like, what will I do? And I'm like, look, you just have to decide your own value hierarchy. The holiday's booked, so you're probably going, cool. Are the 2 staff parties that necessary? And if they are, cool. Like, do you need to booze that much? If you do, cool. Like, are you likely, is the booze really the problem, or is it the fact that you haven't had a night out for 9 years where you haven't gone off the rails for 4 days after and eat takeaway all day? Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, you need to decide this stuff. And I feel it's really empowering, because then all of a sudden where people are, you know, when someone thinks something's bad, so then they have a taste of that bad thing and it's free for all. It's just like, this is bad, so I fucked up, so it's over. I'm like, no, there's no such thing as good and bad. There's appropriate actions at appropriate times. So if you go boozing, realistically you drink 800 to 1,000 calories of booze, but you might eat 10,000 calories of shit over the next 3 days, and that's where you gain 3 pounds of body fat.
Yeah.
So just be very aware on that. You're going on a holiday, you have 2 nights out. Are they really of high value to you compared to the fact that when you emailed me, you said you'd do anything to be a size 12? I'm like, now you have the chance to prove you'll do anything to be a size 12. Like, your mates are trying to rubber arm you to go out. You don't want to go out. Or you do, and maybe being a size 12 in 4 weeks isn't as important to you as you thought it was.
Yeah.
Like, you decide. And very often, like, people are like, I hate you. I'm like, it's a joke. When they're like, yeah, I don't need, you're right. Like, I don't want to go out. It's just habit. Or,
yeah,
size 12 isn't the priority in 4 weeks, so I'll make it an 8-week journey. I'm like, cool, go boozing. Just don't go for takeaway after, and don't get takeaway the next day.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably my only guidelines. And I have found, since I'm just changing people's mindsets, I like to think so anyway, to one of, get rid of absolutes, get rid of extremes. I think science pros and fitness professionals who speak in absolutes are people we should probably avoid listening to. And I definitely think, like, if I'm sitting here, this is just something I wonder, like, if I'm sitting here 80 kilograms, hasn't eaten an absolute whey in over 3 years, doesn't veto any foods, if I want a chocolate bowl, I get one, and I can maintain 80 kilos, then why is Sandra 18 stone, but she never eats chocolate? Like, I don't believe you, Sandra, you know? Like, like, why not factor it in?
Absolutely. I think it's so true about the speaking in absolutes and just being a bit more aware of it and how it affects your choices.
Yeah.
And realizing that that's actually not the way to build up habits that are going to serve you in 2 months, 3 months, four months' time.
I mean, there's a lot more to life than, like, there's a lot more 6 week blocks in your life. Like, you're what, 29?
Yes.
Imagine, like, every single day that those 29 years, since the day you were born to now, you might have two more cycles of that. Like, I urge people to think like that. I really do. Like, it's not ideal that you swamp six chocolate rice cakes for lunch, but leave it there. Just, cool, stop.
There will always be more food.
Yeah.
More food
will always be there, Like,
doesn't run out.
It's all good. Eat the fucking rice cakes, but stop now. Don't just go to the, don't think, to, like, it is, I'm just, I want people to just think like this more than anything. Like, if you continuously try and budget, and once you go a year over, you just keep spending the savings, like, you're going to not only not have the savings, you're going to be broke, i.e. really fat in 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, if you continuously get into that mindset, and I'm just trying to stop people and be like, eat the Solero and stop. But I could never do that. Then don't eat the Solero. Like, don't eat 40 Soleros.
Yeah. That's crazy as well when people say, when you say to people, you can have Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
They have a smaller tub.
Yeah.
Like, but why is the smaller tub not enough for people? And
I agree. I mean, what's the third twirl bar doing for you that the first and second didn't do?
You can't taste it by probably, I don't know, like about 10 mouthfuls, you're probably stopping to enjoy the actual taste of something. And then after that, you can really be mindful and say, well, there's no point in this anymore. But I think people are so, like, conditioned to be like, oh, I ate a tub of Ben and Jerry's, oh, nightmare. And it's almost like they're conditioned to be like that. Oh, I ate a tub of Ben and Jerry's at the weekend because that's my usual thing that I slip back into. And it's just a habit.
And that's why people, I talked earlier about the, you nearly feel silly sometimes coaching people, is like, did you track your steps? Did you track your calories? Did you eat fruit and veg? And are you aware this habit is what's fucking you? Like, you know?
Yeah. And it's just, I think people just need someone from an outside perspective sometimes to go, look, this is it. This is what you're doing. And I'm seeing it from the outside. And people go, oh, yeah.
Well, if someone came into my world right now and saw my business model, for example, someone ahead of me, they'd tear me to shreds, I'm sure, because they have more experience than me. And rightly so.
Yes.
Similarly, I'm sitting here right now about a couple of pounds, nothing fatter than I was in the summer, just because I don't step as much, and it's just not been on higher on the priority ladder. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have consciously not tracked a calorie on my fitness pal for close to 7 weeks. And I, like, that's fine. I accept the consequence of all those actions.
Yeah.
Like, I do. But I'm telling you right now, someone with good knowledge and good calorie knowledge and a good mindset towards it all, if I started tracking my food again tomorrow, I guarantee I'd find 300-500 calories of unaccounted for shit that have just snuck into my diet.
Just normally. Yeah, because you naturally just gravitate towards these things. And and actually, because you know as well, I've decided to go into, like, a bit of a fat loss phase, like, really slowly over the next 6 months. And then last month I had a wedding. And I went back to the UK, and then I came back and my fat loss stalled. And I did have a moment of going, why has this happened? Like, and then I look at it and I go, oh, well, this happened.
That's a good point. That's a great point for listeners, because how many people do, like, well, I'll wait now till life quietens down and then I'll.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? Like, I mean, does life stop when you want to lose fat? Like, yeah, and then what happens when you want to keep it off?
Yeah. Like, this is going to how it's going to be, you know? And you got to build little habits and little ways around that. And it doesn't always have to be, okay, well, now I'm going to, like, do 20,000 steps a day.
But only for 6 weeks until it's Sharon's birthday.
Exactly. It's not. It's,
oh, yeah? What happens at Christmas then when you hate being over it? Like,
exactly. But also, I've definitely put little rules for myself instilled. If I go to another wedding, I'm definitely going to be making a little bit better choices when I'm at that wedding. Because I know that my body might respond better to that, actually. And also, I'll be in a better position afterwards. But I accept that that is something that I'm going to sacrifice. It's not really a huge sacrifice, but it's something I'm accepting, you know? Yeah. And I think it's very interesting to be back in back in the trenches, like you say, and just like be experiencing that as well, because it helps me realize that people, little things like that, that then you can obviously share with people and they might find it helpful too, which is
that was good. Part of my ethos when mm-hmm. I came out here to Barcelona. I moved out here in June. I was 3 months post dislocated shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Ignored two different surgeons' advice, telling me I needed surgery just because chipped bone and stuff. Met with a third surgeon who I know, and he said that he trusted my knowledge to rehab myself. I was trying to build a business. I went from a one-to-one personal trainer in Ireland, and I just literally almost overnight, well, it seemed overnight. I mean, I mm-hmm. slowly put the stages in place and told all my clients I was shifting online. But I wanted to be like, okay, trying to build a business, trying to recover from a dislocated shoulder, but I still want to prove that, like, busyness and things, and it's sort of, like, it's not really an excuse. I almost just did it more for the relatability aspect of clients, where, like, if I get a busy person ring me and say, I didn't train today, I'm like, yeah, do you know what? Maybe that did suit your day today. I didn't want to be constantly, oh, that's an excuse, you know?
Because it can get skewed.
Yeah.
If you're not in their shoes for a very long time, I totally understand that it can get skewed. And for a long time, for about a year, I didn't do any fat loss or anything. And I actually I do this in inverted commas because it's a big buzzword, intuitively, for a while. And I think for me to then carry on coaching people when they're tracking and they're doing all this, I wanted to remember what that feels like.
I mean, I'm a 28-year-old guy. The biggest responsibility I have in life now, in emotionally, is a girlfriend, like another adult human. I run my own little business and I work for myself, so I essentially run my own day. I train when I want, I kind of eat how and what I want, and I don't really have to deal, I don't really have to deal with any humans that I don't want to deal with. So how the hell am I supposed to tell a 36-year-old mother of three who doesn't like their job,
mm-hmm.
well, you should have tried hard. Like, that's not necessarily going to be the thing that helps them. Perhaps trying to help them dance around the fact that their day is not ideal, but that's where I struggle sometimes. Like, that's what I talked about. Like, here I might come across, oh, don't worry about fat shaming. But really, when I'm listening to people, I'm like, fuck, you do have a difficult day.
They do. Like, they really do.
But how do we bridge this gap?
Exactly. I think it's, I'm a huge fan of just being incredibly encouraging.
Yeah, same.
I'm just massively, like, I had someone message me last night and they said, I'm so touched. She probably won't mind me saying, she works three jobs. She worked two of the jobs yesterday and she got home at 10. And I've been giving her just like 15-minute at home workouts just to suit her a little bit better, just so you can get them in. And then she did one late last night at 10 o'clock. And she said, I feel so much better for her. And it's little things like that. When people fit in a little bit of exercise alongside two jobs in a day, it makes you so appreciative and so encouraging of them. When we're sat here and we've got access to a gym, and you know our lifestyle is based around fitness, and we're very enthusiastic about fitness. The minute you have someone like that who you speak to, who manages to do it as well, you have no choice but to be incredibly encouraging.
For sure. You're like, it's two very different lifestyles.
Yeah.
And one that's usually pretty, like, once kids are involved, something I've seen anyway, just because I lived with a mother as well, it's different.
It's very, very different, isn't it? You're not, it's not about you anymore, it's about other people. And fat loss is going to be coming under the bracket of under you.
But that's why you talk about encouraging, and it's so true. I'd nearly say to some people, if they're really struggling with that aspect, the working out and the time, don't use that as an excuse then to eat shit and eat all around you. Like, you can very much have a calorie controlled diet centered around fat loss,
mm-hmm.
or at least fat maintenance and health. If you really actually give that much of a shit, you could easily set up yourself a time restricted or a calorie controlled or both diet that suits your working day. That, like, maybe you can't exercise, but you could consider consuming a couple of hundred calories less in your diet and sticking with it.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to lose body fat that way. I do have a couple of clients online that can't exercise for whatever reason. And rather than give my two cents on whether or not they could make time for it, I just say, look, if you really have decided you don't have time, cool.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to have to keep your calories lower.
Yeah.
And it works for some people. And
maybe they prefer that and that they're going to adhere to it better.
Yeah, when you're encouraging people, I like the idea of encouraging them to remove excuses, because I feel if someone said they don't have time, like, those who don't have time or say they don't have time usually watch 2 to 3 hours of Netflix an evening. And people who say eating healthy is too expensive usually slam down 5 or 6 euro pints and shots on weekends.
Yeah.
So I like to just make people aware of those things that, like, I do think if fat loss is a priority, because it's straightforward,
mm-hmm.
you'll make it work.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. I think it fell off. I'm not saying if getting into peak shape is not necessarily, you don't necessarily have time to go to the gym, but everybody is in the same 24-hour day and is faced with the same food. Like when I was working a long day, I used to do two jobs. I used to work as a nightclub bouncer, believe it or not, and in an office. And mm-hmm. I still found time to train three times a day for my bodybuilding prep. Like, so I'm just curious as to, if you can't exercise, cool, but how come some people can work two jobs, train three times a day, and diet,
mm-hmm.
whereas you say you can't exercise or eat healthy? Like, why can you not do even a little? Like, if you have the time to eat a big, massive kebab, do you not have the time to eat a fruit salad?
Yeah, exactly. It's just not a priority.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, people need to also take ownership of that as well.
I think so.
Yeah. So I'm going to round it up. You've given a lot of incredible information for people to take home, which is fantastic. I'd like to always round things up with the best bit of mindset advice you've ever been given and it's ever been beneficial for you. So if you could share that with the listeners.
For me, nobody cares was my biggest one. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
You can interpret that one kind of many ways, but to me, nobody cares. Everybody's got shit.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we all threw our problems in a pile, most of us wouldn't be long taking ours back, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody cares is the biggest. When I needed it most, it was delivered to me. And I'm a big believer that we could, if you acted today on something you really loved, you could get 70 years of happiness. But by not acting today based on somebody else's point of view that you've usually created, like mm-hmm. the person you're worried about, they think of you, it's not like they're sitting at home thinking about you for 24 hours. They have shit going on too. Like, I just think nobody cares. That's the single best piece of mindset advice that landed with me. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Dietary mindset, Orla had a good one, and that's just food will always be there.
Yeah.
Food will always be there. That was a good one I got as well from Orla, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I think that's an amazing one for people to take away. And it's really funny, actually, whenever I've asked people that last little bit of mindset advice, it's usually been about just not caring about other people, what people think, or just being less aware of what other people
are doing. That's exactly. And I'm like, if you, it's not practical to not care what people think, but just mm-hmm. care what you think of yourself just a hair more, if you can. Because it's a really, 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 really short life when you actually stop and think about it. If you think about the world the way I do and you think, like, for example, if you think, like, when I think of, I think about the world very slightly differently. When I think love, for example, this, I don't even know if this ties into what you're talking about. I think best friendship with the added bonus of standing naked in front of someone else and going, here I am, judge me in all my ugly vulnerability. That, like, I think about the world very insignificantly. I think we're all really vulnerable. I think we're all impending doom. I think we're all chaos. I think we're all just, we create the conception and the misconception that everybody else has their shit together and that we, for some reason, don't, and we're flawed and we're chaotic. We're all fucked. Like, we're all there's not a person in the world that doesn't have a dirty, disgusting little secret or a habit or a shameful thing they wouldn't want people to find out.
Yeah.
But we think it's just us.
Yeah.
So I would advise you to, in that, own your imperfections. And I really mean that. I really mean own whatever imperfections you have, own them. Channel it to working on them. Like, don't settle for the fact you're kind of out of shape. But own mm-hmm. having a slightly tubby belly or something that you get slagged about and then work hard to improve it. Really, really own it. Believe in yourself. Go and chase what you want. Dwell not on your imperfections, just focus on everything you've been given, because the world is constantly going to remind us of our insecurities every day.
Yeah.
Whether it's looking at somebody else that's more beautiful than you and be like, I don't look like him, or whether it's just society being like, yeah, you should have a six pack. Like, own what you've got. And really, really, I think there's nothing sexier than ownership. I think when I am so much more attracted to a human being that just owns who they are and then proudly and confidently exudes that, rather than someone who's like, I have an arbitrary definition of perfect to keep up. Like, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's that inner confidence. And it is.
Yeah. So don't give a shit and own it.
Brilliant.
Own it.
Thank you so, so much.
You're more than welcome.
Coming on the podcast today. Obviously, listeners, if you found this helpful today, which I'm sure you have done, make sure that you rate, subscribe, share, do all of that lovely stuff. Thank you so, so much for listening. And more importantly, thank you so, so much for coming onto the show, Paul.
Pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.